Well, here we are on the Feast of Vartanlands, just celebrating the Feast of Remontians. We've got Lent coming up and a whole assortment of all things to talk about. This is Father Voskin. I am a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the emotional, the spiritual, the psychological, and the physical, putting it all together in this edition, number 455 of The Next Step. Let's take it right now.
This is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The Next Steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
We are not inheriting the earth from our ancestors. We are borrowing it from our children. It's a different perspective, isn't it? You know, when Apple computers just started, we were up in Cupertino starting our church. And I remember this poster that we got from Apple computers because they were very friendly with the schools and giving away all kinds of stuff. And in fact, the early Apple Macintoshes were strategically placed inside of the schools. And fortunately, we had children of school age, so we got to play around on those computers. But I remember there was this beautiful poster that I had hanging in my office, and I even brought it out back from Cupertino to Pasadena. It stayed in my office, and then in Glendale. It was the it was a mountainscape, and underneath it had this Indian saying. I think it was attributed to an Indian saying, old Indian saying, something like that, and said, "We do not inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children." And it was, it had this small little Apple logo at the bottom too, which made it cool, of course. Yeah, people say all kinds of fun stuff and very deep things, but when you put that little Apple logo underneath it, then it becomes cool, right? Of course. It's the Apple mystique. Trust me, people have written so much about it, have really explored. There's a whole science to the Apple mystique. But you put that little Apple logo underneath it, and I mean, I think that quote has been attributed to an old native proverb, even to Ralph Waldo Emerson. Anyway, I'm not here to look into who said it first, but it is a beautiful saying, and it does refer to a perspective. We do not inherit the land, the earth, from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children. And what's that telling you? It's the perspective. Like, if you can understand that perspective, then you understand that you have a different responsibility to that land, right? The inheritance that you have is different from what you borrow from your children. Never. Never. But that's part of being a parent, right? You never want to borrow it from your child. That is your child's. And certainly if you are going to borrow it, you don't want to return it destroyed. You don't want to return it ruined. You want to take a responsibility. And so it shifts the responsibility. Along with a different perspective, there is a shift in responsibility that is so, so important. I know we're going to be talking about this in a couple weeks when we get together for the conference. In fact, we have a young lady who has just returned from the Vatican, from Rome actually, where there was a conference organized by the Vatican, by Pope Francis himself, about the environment, about our responsibility to the environment. So I'm looking forward to hearing what she has to say and what message she brings back. But for today, of course, our hearts are filled. Last week I shared with you that we had just gotten back from Standing Rock, And just yesterday, of course, everything fell through. And they're moving forward with the pipeline and with the oil. And there's a lot of finger pointing, a lot of problems over there. And why did it happen like this? What about the treaties and so on? And of course, there's a lot of disappointment. What is our responsibility to that land? If we rape and pillage the land, what do we expect to come from that land? There's a lot of talk recently. It's rekindled. I remember growing up in the Cold War, and as part of our drill in school, I mean, I remember this as a child. There used to be drop, tuck, and cover, something like that. There was a formula to it, too, that at any time there could be a nuclear explosion, and we would need to drop, duck, and cover ourselves. I mean, this absurd idea that in a nuclear holocaust there would be survivors. And we're hearing it again. We're hearing it again now with a president, Donald Trump, coming into office. They gave him the codes, and he got up and he said that, wow, what an awesome thing this is, that these codes have been given. And of course, there's that fear, there's that anxiety that fear brings, that perhaps the next war might be the last war, not in a good sense, not in the sense that it is the last war and we're finished, but in a totally cataclysmic event where it'd be the last war because humanity may not survive after the next war, after the use of such weapons as atomic warfare. And you know that part of the Next Step mission has been, and part of the In His Shoes mission has been, to try to develop this new dialogue, try to develop the new talk, where we don't go into escalating our fears, escalating our anxieties, escalating our hatreds, our boundaries, our passions, to the point where we misunderstand, we do not understand one another, and it ends in some kind of a battle of egos, a battle of wits, never, a battle of strength, of might. And I remember growing up with this fear. I remember through the Reagan era, when it was the only assertion that we have, the only guarantee we had of non-nuclear war was more power, mutual destruction. Remember that expression? Mutual destruction. So that you would not pick on the other person because you knew that they would destroy you. Yeah. We went through all that. Now, the last 20 years, last 30 years, we haven't been talking too much about it, but it's there. It's in the back of our minds. And certainly when we returned back from Standing Rock last week, there is that idea that there is so much beauty in the world, so much that we don't even understand or cannot even comprehend. I mean, when you live in a city, as I do, or many people do, you fail. I was going to say you forget, but you fail to understand how much beauty is all around you, outside of that city, because, you know, most everything in the city is defined by virtue of its definition, is defined by the structures that are there, by the cement that has been poured. And when you go outside of that cement jungle, that cement, those confines, you see a world that's out there that's defined by greenery. In our case, it's Standing Rock, defined by whitery, one end of the earth to the other, covered in snow. And the beauty of the snow, you know, it is overwhelming. And then when you get close to it, you comprehend that, wow, you know, not one single snowflake is supposed to resemble the other, or there's no two exact snowflakes. You know that saying, right? It's just like the fingerprint. It's hard for me to comprehend. I can't comprehend it, okay? And billions and billions and billions. I do well with two or three. I do well with maybe 10 or 20. I cannot get into that whole idea of billions. It's way beyond my understanding, and I have to sit back and be in awe. So what happened at Standing Rock? Of course, you know the latest news, and they are moving forward, and there are some disappointments, finger-pointing. There are some people who are out there and saying, we should have done this, or we shouldn't have done that. Certainly the people we were with were, you heard last week, an interview with Revo, somebody who was out there right on the front line, and putting it out on the front line. Of course, major disappointment. And as I was thinking about the disappointment that we all felt, and certainly at different levels, people were on the front line, of course, much more accentuated. I thought about what Reverend Dr. King says about this. There's that saying, he says, there can be no deep disappointment where there is not deep love. You love something, you have that deep love, of course you're going to be disappointed. Of course you're going to be disappointed. And if you didn't have that love, you wouldn't be disappointed. But what is the cause of that disappointment is our expectations, of course. We expect that other people are going to be playing by the same rules that we are playing. And as you grow up, you quickly realize that not everybody plays by those same rules. And you have to start making those decisions. Do you play by those rules? Do others play by those rules? Which rules do I want to follow? And it's a hard one, because at some point you need to put yourself out on the line and say that, okay, the flow is going that way. There's hundreds and thousands of people that believe in this set of rules, but I happen to know that there's a better way of doing it. And that's dangerous too, because it means that you're that singular, that solitary soul who is taking the other road, right? Who's taking walking the road less traveled. And it's making all the difference if you could travel on that, right? As the poet says. It's a difficult, difficult proposition. I was thinking about this, and the disappointment comes from our expectations. And specifically, I'm trying to connect the dots with the disappointment that I feel many times in church life. It's this disappointment that we have because we expect people to be following the same rules that we do. For instance, we expect spiritual people, spiritual leaders, by virtue of their titles and positions, to act in a particular way, in a certain way. You have that expectation. This is one of my biggest problems as a priest that I have personally. I mean, they ascribe all these nice things to you, and you realize as a person that you fall very short of it, that introspection that you have towards yourself. And I've shared this with you many times. You know, when Jesus talks about the hypocrite, when Jesus talks about that person who is saying one thing and doing another thing, well, he can do that. Jesus is in the right to criticize somebody because he is sinless. It is Jesus who makes that pronouncement, not us. And too many times as clergymen, we get into that position of judging. It's very easy. We stand there and we say, well, Jesus said this, and therefore I too will clean out the temple, not realizing that, hey, we're part of the problem too. And so it's a difficult, difficult proposition, and it's very, it's a tight balance over there. How do you balance all this? Well, you are the priest. There are certain expectations. On the other hand, you realize that you are mortal, you are flesh, you have will, you have temptations, and you have difficulties in your life too. And you try to look at that, and you try to present it as fairly as possible. And our expectation of spiritual leaders, our spiritual people, by virtue of their titles and positions, will let us down. And that's why we're disappointed. That's why we get disappointed with the church. That's why we hear people saying, well, I go to church and we see the leaders and we see this in disappointment. Now I thought about this too. How about on the political arena? Look at the political arena, right? What do we do there? Well, these are political leaders. They have political offices, right? And then they'll get up and they'll say something that puts them into the spiritual category, right? They'll say something of compassion. They'll say something that comes from the heart. And we get excited because it is a political leader talking or doing about spiritual work, something spiritual. And so we get excited about that. Do you understand where I'm coming from? It's like there's a disappointment when the clergyman acts like a politician. But when the politician acts like a clergyman, it is not disappointing. It is not disappointing. In fact, it is something that we applaud. And we look at it and we say, oh, look, the politician is doing something right. And this is, by virtue of who we are as people, we do this all the time. We look for leaders. We look for heroes, people that we can look up to. And the disappointment is the same. Because rather than looking at the perfection of God, we're looking again at people. Listen what Jesus says. He says, be perfect as your heavenly Father. Can we? I don't know. I don't know if that's attainable. Frankly, in my experience and from all I've read and people's experiences and from all of history, I've never seen that perfect person. Never seen that perfect person who walks through life and doesn't stumble, doesn't go through all that. And that's why I share with you many times that the example of the saints are so important for us because they are people. They are humans. And as much as we look at Jesus Christ in the perfection of God, is as love incarnate, as God incarnate, you're looking at perfection. Yes, absolutely. Can we live? We have to. That's our model. That's who we want to be. That's what Jesus says. Be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect in heaven. Okay. It's a difficult one. It's a difficult battle. But when I look at saints, I feel like, okay, there's a possibility because saints are people like you and me. They've gone through the difficulties. They've gone through disappointments. They've fought on those front lines and have been disappointed. And yet they have been able to be that positive influence in life, to be able to take on life and achieve that sainthood means that they have risen above the dimensions, risen above the challenges, the parameters that this life has imposed upon them. That's pretty big. Disappointments. It's a lot of disappointments. It's because of our expectations. In the same way that we applaud politicians or people that we don't expect going out of their way and doing these good things, it's that same feeling that we have to have towards one another, in fact, of this world. In other words, don't expect. Now, this doesn't mean lower your expectation. That's completely different, right? You should expect the best. Out of who, though? Okay, that expectation. When I say don't expect, it shouldn't be out of others. In other words, looking at somebody's life and expecting them to live up to your standards. Those are your standards. Set those standards and live by them. So that when you say lowering expectations, it's not about looking at somebody else and saying, okay, I'm going to just lower my expectations. No. Can you achieve the expectations that you have of your life? And when you start doing this, we start understanding that we start living as people. We start living without this judgment call on one another, but rather in a very true spirit of harmony. Of course, this is what the object of all true religion should be, is to find that harmony among people. All right, let's take a break right now. We're going to do the song of the day today. I picked out something special, appropriate. This is Holly Miranda, a very brand new song came out this morning. It's called Midnight Oil. It's in support of what's going on at Standing Rock and the protesters. Holly Miranda, Midnight Oil. Holly Miranda doing Midnight Oil. Beautiful words, beautiful song. In support of the protesters over at Standing Rock. This came out just this morning. She does it with the New Asylum Choir. I'll have a link on today's show notes talking a little bit about the song, a little bit about the artist. But mostly, let's keep our thoughts and our prayers focused in with the people at Standing Rock, with what's going on. And asking for peace, really, peace and harmony that's so necessary beyond Standing Rock for us to understand one another here on this planet. We don't inherit the earth. We borrow it from our children. On the wall. Is there an expression like that in English? I don't know. I know in Armenian there is. It probably is something like that. Fly on the wall. Wouldn't you like to be a fly on the wall? Or be careful, there's a fly on the wall. Usually meaning that, you know, somebody's listening in. Or you may want to listen in. And I felt like that a couple days ago when we were at the clergy meeting. You know, 2 days ago, it was the Feast of the Priests. Yes, the Priest Feast. It was Revontians. And so if it was 2 days ago, what does that mean today is? It means today is Vartanans. Two beautiful feasts. A couple days ago, we had the clergy conference on the occasion of the Feast of the Priests. So it's an opportunity for us to be together in camaraderie and brotherhood with the other clergymen. And I've looked forward to this every year, not so much as the last few years. I think it was in 2009 when the Archbishop sent me to Armenia to participate in this feast. And I had a chance to go with my son there, Varajan, and we spent this day, the Revontians Feast and Vartanans, there in the Holy Etchmiadzin, and had a chance to really reflect on the priesthood. And I think ever since then, it's really had a lot more meaning for me. And certainly as it did a couple days ago when we were gathered together as priests. When you think about the priesthood, and of course, as I shared with you just a few minutes ago, you know, the expectations as well as the shortcomings we have of ourselves. And if you can look at those shortcomings, it's an opportunity for you to have a moment of introspection and planning for where do we go forward. And in that planning, it's that prayer. It's the prayer that you have to go forward. I'm reminded every single day I have this, one of my deacons, Archdeacon Hadar Dekmedjan of scholastic fame as well, but just I had such a fortune to be with him for the last 15 years or even a little bit more, 20 years since Pasadena and then in Glendale. And we'd been serving together, and he would always remind me of the priesthood of Melchizedek. And this comes to us from Holy Scripture, and I have this small little card that's in front of me in my office, in front of my computer. It is an icon of Christ crowning the priest, and it says, "You are priest forever in the line of Melchizedek." And it comes to us from Psalm 110, it says here. Sorry, my eyes aren't what they used to be. We have all kinds of devices here. But on this card, there's a prayer. I want to share this with you. It says, "To live in the midst of the world without wishing its pleasures, to be a member of each family yet belonging to none, to share all suffering, to penetrate all secrets, to heal all wounds, to go from men to God and offer him their prayers. To return from God to men, to bring pardon and hope, to have a heart of fire of charity, and a heart of bronze for chastity, to teach and to pardon, console and bless always. My God, what a life, and it is yours, O priest of Jesus Christ." This is by Jean-Baptiste Henri Lacordaire. 19th century. And a very, very beautiful prayer on the life of a priest in a remembrance of the priest on this Revontians feast. And then, of course, today happens to be Vartanans. Vartanans, the warrior. And it's an opportunity for us not only to think about that warrior, but to think about the coming together of these two incredible people. And I'm always like, you know, like, you can't understand, you know, I told you a few weeks ago, remember that podcast? There was just all these things that were happening, the coffee pot going and all this. There's just things that you cannot understand, but they all come into place. And if you tried to do it that way, it wouldn't work. But when God tries it, there's nothing you can do to avoid it. And you need to celebrate those beautiful things. And it was a few years ago when, out of the blue, you know, the cathedral here in Los Angeles on the West Coast, Western Diocese, the Armenian Cathedral, is named Saint Leon's or Leonitis Revontians, Serpots Revontians. And people say, wow, where'd you get that name from? Well, it's interesting because the donor wanted it named after the main benefactor, let's call him. Well, asked if it could be named after his father, whose name is Leon. And, of course, Revont, it's Revontieretz, the feast that we had of the priests. But what's interesting about it is that the cathedral on the east coast of the United States is Srpotsvartanants. I mean, how does this all come together? You've got the two cathedrals in the United States, both coasts, west and east coast, in the name of the two brothers of Christ, in Christ, St. Leon and St. Vartan. And it's their feast that happens this week that we commemorate. One is completed by the presence of the other. One is a warrior who needed the strength of soul. The other one is the soul which needed the strength of the warrior. Together they make this completion. Revontians Vartanans. That's incredible. Incredible. Not too many people connect those dots. You know that, right? You know that. That's part of the armadoxy. That's why you're tuned in right now. Connecting those dots. Okay, anyway. Today happens to be Vartanans. It's an opportunity for us to reflect on that faith and the sacrifice we make for that faith. Now, I asked you, would you like to be the fly on the wall? Well, it's at that clergy conference. We had a clergy conference a few days ago, and there were all kinds of things that were being discussed. Now, one of the titles was given to me, how to make the church more relevant or contemporary. Not relevant, excuse me, more contemporary. And I'm just I apologize because it was done in Armenian, so I'm trying to translate the English word, and it was more about making it a more contemporary church. Jamanagagits, that's the word in Armenian. Okay, so a lot of things were said. I mean, there were all kinds of speeches, all kinds of presentations, and it was very well done. I have to say that I really appreciated this year. It wasn't a lot of rambling. It was everybody was confined to 15 to 20 minutes to make their presentation, and the priest who was the moderator that day made sure that everybody stood right on course. It was very, very well done. But when it came down to this idea of the contemporary church, what do we need in the contemporary church? I couldn't help but to share some of Dr. King's, again, we're going to go back to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, his writings from Birmingham Jail. You know, there's that beautiful thing that he writes, letter from Birmingham Jail. He writes as he's imprisoned and he's awestruck that the clergymen, Christian clergy, are not getting it. They're not with him. They're not standing with him. And in fact, are criticizing him for where he is. And you know, this criticism, you hear this in all churches. People criticize everybody. They criticize. And this is where we're going to go in just a minute. Just hang on for me, because we're going to go into how that criticism begins. People criticize. And then as a clergyman, let me talk for myself. The one thing that I always fall back on is that they even criticized Christ. Yeah, people are always going to criticize something. And people who can do, people who don't criticize, right? We know that saying, right? But if you could take that criticism and use it to benefit yourself, then there is a positive side that we call that positive criticism. But it's so much nicer if you can start looking within and finding it within. And certainly with this passage, I want to share with you this passage that I quoted during my speech. It comes from us from the Birmingham letter. And it says, Dr. King says, so often the contemporary, okay, this is the church that tries to act like, you know, like everything is cool, right? Trying to be popular. He makes another gesture about this earlier. He says, if you want a church that's going to entertain, hire a monkey. Get a monkey and have a monkey come and do its antics in front of you. And sometimes I feel this. Sometimes you go into church and it's just joke and smoke. And you go like, okay, and I'm in a church, or am I in an entertainment lounge? You know, what is the redeeming value of this? So Dr. King comes down hard on this, and he says, so often the contemporary church is a weak, ineffectual voice with a certain uncertain sound. So often it is an arch defender of the status quo. Far from being disturbed by the presence of the church, the power structure of the average community is consoled by the church's silent and often even vocal sanction of things as they are. But the judgment of God is upon the church as never before. If today's church does not recapture the sacrificial spirit of the early church, it will lose its authenticity, forfeit the loyalty of millions, and be dismissed as an irrelevant social club with no meaning for the 20th century. Every day I meet young people whose disappointment with the church has turned into outright disgust. Are you hearing what he's saying? Did you catch that? If today's church does not recapture the sacrificial spirit of the early church, it will lose its authenticity, forfeit the loyalty of millions, and be dismissed as an irrelevant social club with no meaning for the 20th century. What is he talking about? Did you hear a few minutes ago about the sacrificial nature? Did you hear about what Vartanants is about? What it means to give of the self? We have it. Do you hear what Dr. King is saying? He's saying return to Armodoxy. Yeah, this is it. Armodoxy, the early church. And you find that in St. Vartan. The story of St. Vartan. It's not a battle. It's not about warriors. It's not about one group having tanks and the others having bullets. You know, that's a very famous part of the Vartan story, that the Persians opposing them. And many kids will remember this detail because this is one of the first stories that people learn, the story of Vartan. It is one of those bizarre stories. It's a battle that we lose, but we commemorate. The Armenians are the only people that commemorate a battle which we lost. Physically, yes, we lost it, but morally, we won it because we're here today. And that for me is one of the biggest questions. Are we here today? Are we here today? Well, yeah, numbers-wise, yeah, there's people living, there's heartbeats going. But are we here today? Morally, are we here today with that compassion? With that heart, with that understanding of sacrificial spirit, which Dr. King talks about? Well, it's difficult because everybody has their own ways of describing this. And so people will come down on you, and you know, if you're the fly on the wall, you would have heard this. You know, because you hear different points of view. And there's people who will get up and swear by the Bible. Say that, you know, it's written there and this is it. And it's interesting because there's no continuity in what they talk about. They'll take a portion from Psalms. They'll take a portion from Paul's writing, a portion from the Old Testament, this and that and this and that. And so their lectures, their talks are about, well, in Corinthians we read this, and they'll take out one passage. In Kings we read this. In Leviticus the law is said as this and this and this. And then you come to Armenian Orthodoxy, which predates the Bible. Yeah, did you know that? It's very easy. I mean, think about it. Okay, was there a Bible at the resurrection? No. Was there the Armenian church? Absolutely. Thaddeus, Bartholomew were at the resurrection. They brought that message to Armenia. Without a Bible, by the way. They came. Now, I'm not cutting down the Bible. Far from it. We call it the breath of God. And in fact, one of the speakers beautifully articulated that the breath of God implies that there is life in that Bible. And he pointed out that as Armenians, we refer to all written material as living material. And it was just wild. It was beautiful that really the breath of God implies that there is life. Because how do you check life? What's the first thing you do? You know the mirror test. You put it under your nostrils. Are you breathing? And so many times we've heard that that person takes their last breath and therefore dies. Breath is the defining aspect of life, right? It's breathing. And what do we call the Bible? The breath of God. Asvazashunch. It's wild. It implies life. It means that the Bible is not stagnant. It is a living, holy scripture. Touching us. Demanding that we engage with it. As anything that is living demands that we engage with it. But certainly it has its place in that we understand it within the context of Christ. Christ is the center of our faith, not Bible. Jesus Christ is the center of our faith. And we come to know Jesus Christ through the traditions, through the Holy Scriptures, and they together give us the meaning. And why am I saying this? Okay, let's take one of the most simplest passages that we have. It comes to us from the Gospel of John. It's often quoted in the Armenian Church. John chapter 12. Jesus says, unless a grain of wheat must fall and die in the earth, unless a grain of wheat falls and dies in the earth, it remains a single seed. But when it does die, it produces its harvest, many grains. Now, I use this particular passage in talking about making the church contemporary in that Jesus tried to make this spiritual complexity very contemporary in speaking the language of the people. The people were farmers. It was an agrarian society. There were people there that understood taking that seed and planting it. Because, not because they read it in a textbook, but because that was part of their life. And so Jesus made it very simple. He says, okay, look, the grain of wheat has to die in the earth. And then look what happens. It produces a harvest. It comes out. It flowers. And then the flowers, they seed. And there are more seeds. And so too is life. You have to give your life. You have to sacrifice your life. And in sacrificing that life, you understand that there's opportunities for that life to live on. In the seeds that you produce. And the proof of this is the following statement that he says. He says, he who loves his life will lose it, and he who hates his life will keep it for eternal life. And that hating, of course, is that sacrifice. Now, is it or is it not? And I just made a general statement there. That hating is that sacrifice. Huh? This is the point that I want to get to. You see, when Jesus said a statement like this, obviously, somebody along the way must have challenged him. But that's not what we got. The scriptures that arrived to us, namely from St. John, arrived to us in this format. They arrived that Jesus has used this metaphor. He says, unless a grain of wheat falls and dies, it remains a single seed. But when it does die, it produces much harvest, many grains. Okay. Now, do you suppose if somebody said that, if Jesus said that in your presence, that you would engage him in a dialogue by saying that, well, what do you mean by dying? I mean, that's fine for a seed to die, but what about us? What does it mean that we die? Now, there was probably this kind of interaction, or when Jesus said, unless you have the faith, if you have the faith the size of a mustard seed, you can move the mountain. Don't you suppose somebody said, hey, wait a minute, Jesus, what is that supposed to mean? And there was an opportunity to engage in dialogue where the disciple was learning from the master. And what happens 2,000 years later, we get this Bible that comes to us in many formats. And by that, you know, we have the leather bound, we have the gold pages, the red lettered editions, we have all kinds of different translations. And so basically we've received a product. And in there, we read something and we take apart something. We look at that and we say, okay, well, this is what it means. Well, that's our interpretation of what that means. And you got to be careful, because when you interpret, you're bringing in all kinds of stuff that you bring in your personal biases and reflections. And that's, to me, it's a no-no. In fact, it's a no-no for the Christian Orthodox Church. And that's why the Bible is a product of the church, and it is interpreted through the church. This idea that everybody is a free person to interpret, it's a 500-year-old tradition started by the Protestant Reformation. But that wasn't the intent of it, but it has become. And it becomes very popular because people have Bibles. And I hate to say this, because somebody's going to misconstrue it, and they always do. But you have a Bible in your house because of a profit motive. Yes, people have figured out that, you know, this is a popular book, let's sell it. And so that's why you have Bibles in all different kinds of forms, with the leather, with the bound leather, with the engraving, with the gold leaf on top. Yeah. Somebody's making money off of that. And Bibles, number one seller, I think even until today. Most sold, everybody has one, but how many people read it? How many people take the time to read through it and understand it? People will come up to me and always ask me, especially new parents or people wanting to buy a gift for baptism. They'll say, do you have a Bible? And I say, yeah, here's a Bible. And usually mine are not ornate or anything. They're usually these paperback editions, which I invite people to read, to kind of like put dog ears on and get dirty with. And they say, no, don't you have the small ones? And I know what the small ones are for. They put it under the pillow of the baby, of the individual. They want a pillow. And it's a beautiful gesture. It's like saying, like, let there be a blessing upon this child. Let there be the blessing of the Bible in this thing. But I always tell the family, I said, be careful. You put that under your baby's pillow, your baby grows up with a crooked neck. Instead, why don't you read that scripture to the baby? Why don't you read those holy words for yourself? And this is the next step that you need to do, is okay, see the Bible as a means, as an expression of something great. Okay, so there's your Bible. Today happens to be Vartanants. You have the spirit of giving, the spirit of sacrifice that we have to heighten. And guess what we have on top of all of this? This coming Monday, as we speak right now, before the next step comes out, this coming Monday happens to be the beginning of Lent. You have an opportunity for 40 days in front of you to get your act together, to put it all together. If you've made mistakes, it's a time of penance, it's a time of reflection, and it's certainly a time to set your path straight. Very, very important time, Lent. I cannot impress upon you how important it is, because it is what the Christian is called to do. The inner reflection, but not for the sake of inner reflection, so that the other, 40 days of Lent, so that the other 325 days in front of you will become meaningful, productive, and beautiful days to live in. Lent is a preparatory period for the Easter season, for this beautiful this beautiful command that's going to come to us, that Christ has now conquered even death, and an opportunity for you to conquer as well. So during this Lenten period, what I'm going to suggest to you is take advantage of it. There are all kinds of things that you can do. And I'm going to make sure that they are on our website. And Susie and I are right in the, actually, we had an incredible meeting last night where we planned out what we're going to be doing with the Apostle page. And if you go and explore on the Apostle, you'll find some Lenten stuff, but we will put it on today's show notes. Okay. There are three Lenten journeys that we have produced over the years. I'm inviting you to take one of those journeys. There is the actual Lenten journey itself. There is a Lenten journey of healing. This is in particular if you're suffering, do the 40 days of healing Lenten journey. There is also the Lenten journey of the Holy Divine Liturgy. Learning the Divine Liturgy, this Holy Badarak, what an incredible thing to do during the 40 days. So that during those 40 days, you look within, you increase your faith, you become stronger as a Christian, as a practicing Christian, and then you take it out and you blow out the world, right? With goodness, with love, with harmony. Okay, how good can it get? So anyway, I will have those links on today's show notes. Do check it out. It's called The Lenten Journey. It's a separate page. There'll be also some dietary restrictions. Now, I go through this every year, but I always have to because somebody invariably asks, okay? Yes, chicken is meat. Yes, fish is meat. The Lenten diet is a vegan diet in the Armenian Church. It's 40 days of abstinence from all animal products. That includes fish. That includes chicken. And despite what you've been taught, despite what your grandma said and everything like that, this is the rule. Now, grandma said, we don't have to do it on weekends. Okay, that's fine. You know, nobody's going to check you on this. You don't have to do it at all. You don't have to do it 5 days a week. You don't have to do it 2 days a week. It's completely between you and God. And it's not up to you to go out and tell people, hey, look, I'm doing Lent. No, that's not the purpose of it. Purpose is for you to make a pact and to do something between you and God that you keep. So, you know, hey, I can't give up meat, so I'm going to give up chocolate. I always hear this people say, you know, my weakness is chocolate, so I'm going to give it up. Well, I'm going to be really honest with you. Chocolate is not the Lenten diet, you know, giving up chocolate. But if that makes it work for you, do it. It's better you do that than nothing at all, right? Do some kind of gesture. Stay away from gossip. How about that? Pretty cool. Stay away from gossip. And you say, well, you know, I'm going to tell you how difficult that one is. I've tried many times to stay away from gossip, but here's the problem with it. Other people, right? So they come and they start engaging, and then you have to go through this whole thing of saying, well, I'm not gossiping because it is Lent, and then the question is, well, have you been gossiping before, and so on, blah, blah, blah. You know where I'm going with this. You got to kind of keep it to yourself, and then at the same time, you're also... You also need a defense against people who are going to come. It's the same way with the meat. I'm not eating meat during Lent. And then you go to somebody's house and they put out this big meat feast. And you say, well, I don't want any. Oh, are you a vegetarian? No, I'm not a vegetarian. I'm just observing Lent. Oh, you're doing that. Okay, now you get into that whole thing. I don't know. It's overwhelming. It's too much. So make a promise that you can keep. Try it for 40 days. Definitely do the Lenten journeys. They're 5, 6, 7 minute little daily meditations that you listen to, that you read, and it helps you move through the Lenten period. So all this will be on today's show notes. Do check them out. There are links there that you can go to and you can connect with. So with that, I'm going to leave it for today. Happens to be Vartanants. We just celebrated the Feast of the Priests, Revontians. Happens to be the beginning of Lent. It happens to be an opportunity for us to reflect upon a life that is of service and of giving. And it also happens to be a time when we look at the old ancient church and understand how important it is, that sacrificial nature which Dr. King talked about. How's that? A lot of dots to connect, and I hope I did it for you. Let's take a break right now. Here is Susie to make her announcement. I'll be back to share with you about the conference coming up.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 9th year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you to all of you for all the wonderful wishes that you send, the beautiful notes, and your thanks, your appreciation. I really appreciate it. From this end, too. Especially a big shout out for Sonia from Florida, who sent me a giant box. I get this box in the mail. I open it up, and it's a big Armenian Bible. And a beautiful, beautiful Bible. It was her father's. And we have accordingly placed it within the Western Diocese Library for all to enjoy and read from. Like I said, yeah, we don't want it underneath your pillow. We want people to read. Happens to be a 1960 edition of an Armenian, contemporary Armenian Bible. And as I was thumbing through the pages, guess what? I found this small little comic strip. Yeah. It was a small little comic strip attributed to Ripley's Believe It or Not. Now, there you go. There you go, back in time, right? I don't know if they still have that. They must. I'll check the internet and make sure that I put an appropriate link on today's show notes. But I did scan what I did find in the Bible. It's a small little comic strip. And it used to be, I remember as kids, we used to thumb through the newspaper and find that section because it was always these oddball things, you know, that you'd find in there. These freaky things that you'd find in there. But there'd be educational comic strips too. And one of them, the one that was saved in this Bible, said on top of it, the first Christian king happens to be Saint Upgod for us. The first Christian king, Upgod, it says, of Armenia. Yeah. Upgod was the first Christian king. And so inside this Bible, Sonia's father had saved this small little strip, and I found it. I scanned it. It'll be on today's show notes. You could check it out, look at it. It's pretty cool. It was pretty brittle, too, so it kind of got beaten up along the way, but we did manage to put it together and get it scanned. So I hope you'll enjoy that. But along with that, of course, is the bigger thing, is that we have a chance to talk about Upgod and talk about all the things that we talk about here, because we have a conference coming up in a couple weeks. And I hope that you're going to make every effort to be there. It's March 10th, 11th, and 12th. It's called Reclaim. And if you've been following us on Facebook or looking at the pages, embracing-faith.com, you'll see that every day there's new information about a different presentation. If you look at the page with all the presenters on there, you go, wow, this is really wild. At least I do, too. I just look at it and go, this is really wild. I can't wait to hear this and be there and be a part of this. And I hope you will be a part, too. It's really easy to register. You get on the page, embracing-faith.com. It's really easy to get here. It's going to be in Burbank, which happens to have its own airport. But if you can't get to the Burbank airport, you get to LAX, you drop me a line, and we'll make sure that somebody picks you up from LAX. It's 3 days, and we even have a hotel. Guess what? Hilton Hotel is giving you a break on the rooms. Yes. So we're making every opportunity for you to enjoy those 3 days, for it to be a spiritually uplifting 3 days. Never before have we tried this, a conference of this magnitude. And it's something that's going to be part of history. The Archbishop Hovnan Derderian, who's in charge of this diocese and the head of this diocese, is also in charge of the youth movement in Etchmiadzin. So we're looking at this being a prototype for something that's going to be coming up in 2018 with the entire youth of the world. So we're excited about it. It's an opportunity that God is giving us, and we hope that you will be part of it as well. Do go on the webpage, embracing-faith.com, and register now. Well, that about does it for this week. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. I want to do a big shout-out to our dear friend Jimmy. He came out to church last Sunday. We were in San Diego at the St. John Garabed, Surpovanes Garabed Church. And it was great to see him as well as all the wonderful people over there. Now, that's real Southern California. Okay, we are in Los Angeles area. Now, you go down a little bit farther down, and there's real Southern California. It was beautiful in San Diego. It was great to be there. Great to see Jim as well. Listen, I want to thank you all for joining us. Please check us out at all the usual spots, inissues.com, epostle.net, all of our Facebook pages. They're all there for you. Do get involved with the Lenten period. Next time I see you, next time we talk, we're going to be in the middle of Lent. We've already started. Yeah, don't wait for that Mardi Gras stuff. Don't wait for that Ash Wednesday. We start it next Monday, and there's all kinds of stuff available for you. It's an education process. It's a learning process. It's a mellowing out process. Take advantage of it. Join one of the groups that we have, one of the Lenten journeys that will be on today's show notes, along with everything else we talked about. Hey, for the wonderful team who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
You're seeing the same sky as we are.